Well, we didn't lose many people from the first session to the second session. I told guys coming up, I said, people that enjoy history will probably come. Those that don't won't. Those that don't know what we're talking about will leave at halftime. Well, let's come back to North Alabama and to Lauderdale County. One of the earliest located preachers, if I can use that term, that I know of was Ephraim D. Moore. And Moore was a student of Stone's at Rittenhouse Academy. And coming into this area in 1823 was fairly early. And so here he is preaching in 1823 at the Republican Church on Cypress Creek in Florence, or outside of Florence in Lauderdale County. And again, at the time, I don't know of any churches meeting in Limestone or Madison County. He influenced Talbert Fanning, and Fanning had this to say about him when he died. He said, "We're more indebted to our deceased brother E.D. Moore for our early religious instructions and impressions than to any other man dead or alive." That's a mouthful, isn't it, coming from Talbert Fanning. I think so. I think Chris Moore's probably from this Moore family. Later he goes to Texas. While he was in Texas, he teams up with Mansell Matthews, who was also from Lauderdale County, and they went throughout the state of Texas starting churches. And so they had a tremendous influence on the church in Texas. Another man that has to be mentioned is James Matthews, who was another student of Stone's at Rittenhouse Academy. Came into Lauderdale County in the early 20s. He baptized Talbert Fanning in Cypress Creek there, just north of Florence. He preached at the Gravelly Springs. It was sometimes called Barton's, and sometimes called the Liberty Church of Christ. They had a brick building before the Civil War. That building disappeared after the war. Don't know what happened to that. Probably burned. Most of Gravelly Springs was burned. One of the largest Union encampments in Alabama, I guess the largest ever, was at Gravelly Springs. He left Alabama, went to Mississippi, became very wealthy, and was elected the state auditor. He's buried in Senatobia, Mississippi. This is what Talbert Fanning had to say about James Matthews. And again, this is a mouthful. "He was the teacher of our early youth, our instructor in the Christian religion in riper years, and upon an understanding confession of the faith with his own hands, he baptized us into the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, October 1827. As an intellectual man, we doubt whether he ever knew, we ever knew his superior." And again, Fanning was in the company of Alexander Campbell quite a bit. So that's quite a mouthful to say about this man, James Matthews, who preached in Lauderdale County. His cousin, Mansell Matthews, was another great gospel preacher. He was converted by Benjamin Lynn Despain when Despain was preaching at Waterloo. He was apprenticed to Dr. B.F. Hall when Hall was working as a dentist in Florence. He led the Church on Horseback and Wagons to Texas. He organized the First Church of Christ in Texas. He joined the Texas Army right after he got there. And he was dressing Sam Houston's wounds when Santa Anna was brought before Sam Houston. And I'm sitting there thinking what's going through his mind when he sees Santa Anna, and he knows this is the man who had my young friend Randolph Despain murdered. There you go. I'm sure that had to go through his mind. He continued to preach in Texas till his death. Great stories about him. I don't have time for it, but during the Civil War, he was arrested for treason and was condemned to be hanged. He finally got out of it, obviously, lived 1891, but that's another story. Harold Kendrick, a native Lauderdale County boy, born in 1815. He preached in Tuscumbia. He baptized J.H. Hunley of Morrisville, moved to Texas, baptized over 10,000 people, wrote on religious issues today. He was a brother to Alan Kendrick, who was also a great gospel preacher during that time. I have Carol Kendrick's book here that I'd loaned to Benny, and Benny brought it up to me a while ago, and he says, "You tell the people here that that book's worth over $500. He said, "Just the first few pages of it is a priceless thing." And this is Religious Issues by Carol Kendrick. It was published in 1890. So I'm glad to have a copy of that book also. Talbert Fanning, his influence was just tremendous. He was a boy in Lauderdale County. He lived out in that area where the Chisholms lived, close to the Republican Church. And as a young boy, he heard the gospel preached. And he was baptized by James Matthews. Now, B.F. Hall presented the sermon. Matthews baptized him the next morning in Cypress Creek. He left Florence. Yes, Chisholm Road is named after the Chisholm family there that lived just north of Florence. That's right. He left home and went to Nashville University and was an authority in agriculture. He was the first editor of the Agriculturalist, and I think that paper is still in existence. He was one of the top agricultural experts in the nation. He started Franklin College. He taught many gospel preachers, including David Lipscomb and T.B. Larimore. His influence in keeping the instrument and the human organizations out of the church was just paramount in the salvation of the church. Carl. Right, I've got some pictures of it that didn't include them in this, but there are at least two historical signs that talk about the Nashville Airport now. The new Nashville Airport is the old Elm Craig plantation where Fanning's school was located, where his farm was located. Those bodies were exhumed and they were taken to the what's the old Mount Olivet Cemetery. He and Charlotte. He was born there. He moved to Lauderdale County when he was 8 years old, I believe it was. He was raised in Lauderdale County. He was not a native. His parents came from Tennessee and Alabama. And he lived there until he was grown and then left and went to Nashville. John Taylor, one of the most fascinating stories, and I see Bobby nodding his head. He knows who John Taylor is. There are not many independent movements that I can name, probably less than 10, where people studied themselves out of denominational error and began preaching the truth. One of them is Wade Barrett, right up here in Giles County, Tennessee, the Robertson Fork Church of Christ. Fascinating story. In the 1830s, he taught himself the truth. Benjamin Lynn taught himself the truth. John Taylor in Franklin County, Alabama, taught himself the truth. He was a Baptist preacher. He was a blacksmith, carried his Bible under his hat, on his head, wore the top of his head thin. He didn't have any hair up there. Said that was because of the Bible. He was always ready to pull that Bible out and study with somebody. He read Acts 2:38, and he said, "We don't do that in the Baptist church. I want to be baptized for remission of sins." Couldn't get anybody to baptize him. Finally, under cover of darkness one night, he and his wife were baptized for remission of sins. And people started calling him a Campbellite. He didn't have a clue who that was. He never heard of Alexander Campbell. He would later on. I've got letters in the Harbingers where he's written letters to Campbell telling him about debates he held in North Alabama and also around Etowamba, Mississippi, in that area. He also worked down in Marion County in that area. He and Jerry Randolph were preaching buddies. Elisha Randolph and those folks, don't have time to talk about them. He helped keep the church together during the Civil War. I'm going to write a little short story called "Who Won the Civil War?" And the answer to that is the devil won the Civil War. The devil won the Civil War. Just about wiped out the church. John Taylor is buried in the Taylor Cemetery in Franklin County. And this stone was paid for, two stories. One, H. Leo Bowles, when he included him in his biographies and sermons of gospel preachers, took proceeds of that and put the stone there. Can't talk about the church and the spread of the church, the gospel of North Alabama, without talking about T.B. Larimore. And there's no way I can impress upon you the importance of this man. And he's got a lot of bad flack over the years as a fence setter and that sort of thing. But I'll tell you what, one of the guys who studied all of the students that attended Mars Hill for 18 years has only found two that went with the Christian church. So I think his influence is tremendous. He's from the Sequatchie Valley near Chattanooga. He was a Confederate spy. He studied at Franklin College after the war, came to North Alabama in 1868, married Esther Grisham the same year. J.M. Pickens brought him to North Alabama to teach at Mountain Home School that he operated over in Lawrence County. One of the interesting things about Larimore is when he came to Florence, the first place he preached was at the Hopewell Church, which is located just about where Martin's clothing store is on Cox Boulevard, right behind them. He did such a lousy job, they packed him up and carried him over to Republican because they needed a preacher over there. 30 years later, this man is the most in-demand preacher on the globe. So he learned something about preaching during the next 30 years. He opened Mars Hill in 1871. School continued until 1887. The purpose was to train young men to preach the gospel. And he trained hundreds of young men to preach the gospel. And those boys would go out on the weekends out into the communities and preach and teach and establish churches. They did that all over North Alabama. That's why there's so many churches of Christ in North Alabama. It goes back to this man right here. He closed Mars Hill in 1887 in order to preach full time. He's buried in Santa Ana, California. Some of the quotes about Larimore. This is from John T. Brown, Churches of Christ, 1904, and I've been trying to buy a copy of this. It costs about $300. Carl's got a copy. It'll cost you $300. Benny has got it on computer, and he'll sell that to you and tons of other stuff. I've got Benny's list here, and let me just say, Benny does a tremendous amount of work in preserving restoration history. And if you get a chance, come up and look at Benny's list. There's another sheet to this somewhere. And if you're interested in some restoration materials, Benny's the person to see. But Brown said he probably preached more sermons, baptized more people, and established and set in order more churches than any other man of modern times. That's a mouthful, isn't it? F.D. Shrigley said, I've seen him sitting at his desk with 1,000 invitations to hold gospel meetings and tears flowing down his cheeks because he could not go. He was tied to the school at Mars Hill. That's why he finally gave in and said, look, I'm closing the school and going to preach. I've given the school almost 20 years of my life. Now I'm going to go preach. And R.V. Glenn Freed had this to say. T.B. Larimore was both grand and eloquent. He was an orator of the rare type, truly an eloquent man. To my mind, one of the greatest things in the life of this man of God is the fact that later in life, he suppressed his oratorical powers, lest people might be moved by his oratory rather than by the Word of God. I've got all of the books on Larimore by Shrigley and his wife, Emma Page Larimore. You can read some of those sermons and start crying. I mean, it's just beautiful. I can't imagine a person speaking the words that I read on the page. Just truly amazing. In 1880, he went out to the central community there in Lauderdale County to the Macedonia Baptist Church, preached one sermon. They changed the name to Macedonia Church of Christ. Church still meeting out there. Bobby's been out there, no greetings. The longest sermon, our longest meeting, was conducted in Sherman, Texas in 1894. 5 months and 4 days. During this meeting, he preached 333 sermons, preached twice every day, three times every Sunday, and there were more than 200 additions to the church during the meeting. That's meeting, isn't it? Can you imagine that? This is a picture of the old Mars Hill College, and that, of course, is the Larimore home. This was probably made sometime in the 1880s, and this is how Mars Hill looks today, the Larimore home. This is the historical sign in front of it. And across the road, or down the road, the foot of the hill, is the old baptizing hole. And I found that picture of Larimore baptizing somebody. So I went down there and found the spot. And I was going to cross the creek and get the picture from the same angle until the snake swam out. And I thought, boy, you know, those fellas had a lot to deal with back in those days. Breaking ice to baptize people, fighting snakes to get into the water, and all of that kind of thing. So I decided that picture would work just as well. His wife is buried there at the Grisham Cemetery. So is his son, T.B. Larimore Jr. Toppy was a young doctor, about 30, 31 years of age when he died, and they're buried there in Florence. This is the old Mars Hill Church. Bobby said when he was a boy, he went there many, many times for preaching and for meetings and that sort of thing. And dinner on the mountain. That's right at the foot of the hill there, and that's where Larimore preached for many, many years.
Brother Larimore preached a lot there at Mars Hill. There was a woman back in the early part, about even up toward the middle of the last century, who was still so impressed with his great preaching. The younger preacher came there one time just visiting him. And he was rather influenced where Larimore was. He took his foot and rested.
Obviously, teaching school, you influence some people. And one of the fellows that just really fell in love with Larry Moore was his student, Fletcher Douglas Strigley. And F.D. Strigley was raised on Rock Creek, Colbert County, was converted by T.B. Larry Moore, was not baptized by him, attended Mars Hill Academy, wrote extensively, was the front page editor of Gospel Advocate. I've got 3 or 4 books. He wrote 70 Years in Dixie, Smile and Tears, Larry Moore and His Boys. His brother F.B. published some of F.D.'s writings after he died. He broke the mold. Most gospel preachers live to be very old. He died about 44 years old, a very young man. His brother, F.B. Strigley, of course, was born at Rock Creek, attended Mars Hill. By 1898, he had baptized over 2,000 people, held 24 debates, and had preached in just a number of states. And in fact, F.D. included F.B. in his biographies and sermons, 1898. And I finally got a copy of that. I've only seen 3 of them, and I've got one of the originals. I also have the reprint that was done about 1962. And if you ever get a chance to get a hold of that book, you need to do it. This is the old Strigley home site. The cabin is gone, but that's the well there. And the fellow that's holding the brush back is Hubert Black. And he attends out at Piney Grove. I preached at Piney Grove off and on for 20 years. He is a direct descendant of John Taylor that I told you about earlier. Early churches in Lauderdale County. I have a copy of the statistical report of the Christian churches, 1848, and it says the Cypress Creek Church had 67, Blue Water 13, Liberty 85, Hopewell was not included, the Waterloo Church had disappeared by 1848. Cypress Creek, back in the early 40s, had 250 members. Something drastic happened to that church to reduce the number of members during that time period. And this is the information that appeared in the Christian Messenger in 1832. Where Stone says, we sent 300 hymn books to Waterloo, Alabama, consigned to James Witherspoon for elders James E. and Mansell Matthews of Barton's, Lauderdale County, Alabama. Usually when you order song books, you try to order one per person. That's why we felt like there were probably 300 members of the church there at Waterloo. Early churches in Franklin County, and Franklin County included Colbert County prior to the Civil War, Russellville, Rock Creek, and Tuscumbia, and I'll just mention some of them. And I'm not going to read this to you, I'm going to tell you about it, but this is a quote, I think 3 slides from The Hazard of the Die. And it tells the story about how Fanning started the church in Russellville. He decided he was going to Columbus, Mississippi, so he left Nashville and came down through Florence to visit his old home place, came across to Tuscumbia, preached at Tuscumbia Church of Christ, went across Colbert Heights to Russellville, about 15 miles south there, stopped, spent the night, and preached that night, and the people were just awful. He got up the next morning and said, I'm going. I'm not staying in this place. So he took off out of town, got about a mile south of Russellville, and the spring on his wagon, on his carriage broke. So he and his wife, Charlotte Fall, who was the sister of P.S. Fall, Philip Fall, went back to Russellville. And when I think about, you think about those movies, Back to the Future, how little things affect the future. Eugene Britnell probably would not be sitting here this morning if that spring on that wagon had not broke. That's not a stretch. Isn't that true? I thought about that last week when Olin was speaking, that Olin wouldn't be standing here if that spring hadn't broke on that wagon. But what happened is he went back to town, inquired how long it'd take to get fixed. It was going to take a week or two. And so he says, well, you know, we're going to preach. So he sent word out at candle lighting, we're going to preach. And during the day, he went out to visit all the farms because he was one of the top agricultural men in the nation. Well, the farmers were impressed with him. He could talk to them. He understood them. Yeah, we'll come here, you preach. So what happened was that it says when he finally decided to continue his tour, leaving a town where he found a little interest and great prejudice, Fanning was able to leave a congregation consisting of more than 2/3 of the heads of the family in the community. Because the spring broke on the wagon. Eugene Britnell's from Franklin County, a number of churches in Franklin County. This was the beginning of the Washington Street Church of Christ. Benny preached for a number of years, Washington Avenue Church of Christ, and Russell. And so I think that's one of the interesting stories. Also, one of the people that was there at that time was Samuel Sevier. He was the son of John Sevier, who was the governor, former governor of Tennessee. And Dr. Sevier was one of the original members of the church there. And again, people that you know, you would never know your elder Benjinaris if that spring had broken that way. Because Billy Norris's grandmother's grandfather was Samuel Sevier. And again, that's just one of those fascinating stories. And people that I've known over the years, like Billy Norris and Benji and those folks that I have such high regard for, may have never been members of the church had the spring not broken on that way. Well, the old Rock Creek Church is an interesting church. I was able to get in it last summer and look around. I think we're taking a break here. But anyway, this is a church where T.B. Larimore preached, where the Shrigleys attended. They were from down that area. No, it closed about 1970, and there were conservative members of the church that were using the building up until that time. Kenneth Greenhill and some of those folks were some of the last ones to use that building. Well, they started the Shrigley Church of Christ, which is right there on the highway on 247. Have any of you ever seen an upping stone? The old churches had upping stones. That's where the wagons would pull up, and there was an upping stone there. This stone's probably about 30 inches high with two steps, and you step up on that stone, the ladies would get into the wagons and so forth. This was an upping stone that came from the Rock Creek Church. It's now at Heritage Christian University in Florence. Another picture of the building there. Tuscumbia Church of Christ. Interesting story here. W.H. Wharton was the son-in-law of Tuscumbia's founder, Michael Dixon. He broke with the Presbyterians in 1834 after reading Walter Scott's Evangelist. Joined with the Baptists, realized he couldn't get along with them, started the Church of Christ in Tuscumbia with 12 members. Carol Kendrick, who wrote this book, preached for this church. Later on, Carol Kendrick would come to Mooresville and baptize J.H. Hundley. One of the letters there in 1835, he tells about one of the fellows that opposed him. We'll just move on past that. Here's another letter that Wharton wrote to Campbell in 1834. He says, since our exclusion and separation from the Baptist denomination, 12 of us organized ourselves into a worshiping congregation to be called the Church of Christ in Tuscumbia. Early churches in Limestone County. The gospel's going to come back from Lauderdale County into Limestone County. Some of those guys like Ephraim D. Moore and James Matthews and J.H. Dunn are coming back into Limestone County and preaching the gospel now. The Green Hills campground area, and Eugene, you may know more about this than I am, but I'm told that's in the Hayes Mill area. It's right there close by where you preach. The census of 1848 said there were 40 members of the church. We have references to Poplar Creek in 1833, Mooresville in 1851, Reunion in Bethel. This is some of the documentation. 1828, James Matthews reports, I've been informed that a camp meeting near Athens in Limestone County, about 20 professed faith in Christ, 15 of whom were baptized. 15 and 20, at least five that what? Were accepted on their Baptist baptism, probably. David Lipscomb, till the day he died, never taught that a person had to be rebaptized. Austin McGarry and some of those folks out in Texas took him to task time and time again, firm foundation. Some of those, yeah, that's right. 1833 mentioned some agents or actually some folks that subscribed to the messenger in Limestone County. 1834, another camp meeting, and again this is believed to be in the Hayes Mill area. 1834, Joshua K. Spear reports that there was a preaching meeting at Poplar Creek, and I'll show you that in just a minute. This is it. He says, I attended a four-day meeting at Poplar Creek, Limestone, Alabama. This is report December 4th, 1833, sent to the Millennial Harbinger. Carl asked me last month, said, you going to talk about Brother Officer? And I said, yeah, you can't talk about Limestone County without talking about R.W. Officer, Rube Officer. He's an interesting fellow. He was preaching in Limestone County in the 1870s and 1880s. And they had a heresy trial out at Poplar Creek. And I'm not sure if it was in the late 1870s or early 1880s that this heresy trial took place. I have a copy, a transcript of the heresy trial that Shrigley included in his biographies. And basically what happened at Poplar Creek was they brought in Graves, the Graves-Distler debate, the Baptist Graves is the guy who actually tried him. He was one of the most popular Baptists in the country at the time. And they'd ask Brother Officer questions, and he'd answer them with a scripture, and it just drove them crazy. And basically, Graves says, finally says, you know, we're not here to discuss the Bible, we're here to discuss Baptist doctrine. But it's an interesting trial. If you want to read that, it's in that book. I've got a copy of it. Later on, we find him in Florence in the 1880s, preaching in Florence. He leaves and goes to Oklahoma and preaches with the Indians out in Oklahoma. And the Indians gave him the name Man Who Is Not Afraid of Thunder. He was a pretty rough, tough old boy. And so they had an appreciation for R.W. Officer. Now, there's a church at Poplar Creek now, of course, a Baptist church there. And I don't know whether it started out as a Baptist church, or we found there were camp meetings or preaching that took place out there. Mooresville, of course, is one of the interesting stories. And since that building is still here, some of you are very familiar with the Mooresville story. J.H. Dunn, January 20th, this was in Millennial Harbinger, 1853. Of course, the success of his labors at Mooresville and Triana to have been at the former place nine editions, the latter one. These editions were made during the occasional visits of Brother D in the months of November and December. J.H. Dunn died in the pulpit, collapsed in the pulpit, preaching in Athens when he was 100 years old. I think it was a day before his 101st birthday. I don't know. Of course, this is the Mooresville Church as it looks today. And there's a couple of pictures, or a picture that's hanging in the post office there. I didn't get a very good shot of it, but that's what it originally looked like. You notice over the side says Christian Church, what it's called. If the next slide will come up. J.A. Garfield wrote his wife July 5th, 1863. He was camped out there in that area. He says, there's a church in the village of Mooresville nearby, and they have sent up inviting me to speak to them on Sunday. If I'm not too unwell, I have a notion to speak to them. And he did speak at Mooresville, we're told, and that's evidently documented. Very unusual. He had this Union officer speaking in this southern church. But he was an interesting fellow. Garfield, of course, is a gospel preacher that became president of the United States. He was a general during the Civil War. And I thought this was kind of interesting to compare these two generals. On one side, you had James A. Garfield. The other side, you had Richard M. Gonneau. Richard Gonneau was just his family tree goes on back. His great-grandfather baptized George Washington. I've got a picture of that. Hangs in the William Jewell College Gonneau Chapel. And Richard's father was John Allen Gonneau. If you know anything about the history of the church in Kentucky, you understand that name. But Richard M. Gonneau was just a fascinating fellow. It says that he was a doctor, said he would lead his men in battle, doctor their wounds, and preach to them on Sunday, baptized over 10,000 people. So he was an interesting fellow. Of course, Garfield was president of Hiram College prior to the war. When the war broke out, several of his students went with him to enlist in the Ohio military, and their first action was at Shiloh, I believe. And, of course, he became president shortly after he was killed. Yes? Is that right? And on the bridge. I'm glad you told me that. That's one of the things, reasons for presenting this, hopefully, that you can share information with me that we can use in some other presentations. Yes, and he went off the deep end. Yeah, sure did. Early churches in Madison County, I believe Benjamin Lynn started the church in Madison County. 1827, we have a reference in the Messenger of Major Thomas Brandon of Huntsville being listed as an agent. No members in the 1848 census. 1834, there was a church meeting in the theater in Huntsville, and the next slide should give me the documentation on that. It was a letter written by W.H. Wharton to Walter Scott in 1834. He says, Brother Smith was in Huntsville in January and preached some 8 or 10 times. He goes on to say he was denied the use of all meeting houses. That was common back then to share your meeting house. But the prejudice has really gotten strong in the 1830s. Why? By 1832, when the Stone Movement and the Campbell Movement merged, the Baptists began to say, wait a minute, we got to watch for these guys. I've seen a copy of the 1834 Muscle Shoals Baptist Association where they warn against the Campbellites. Yeah, not to have anything to do with it. And then he goes on down here to say, we were permitted by the kindness of the Thespian Society to occupy the theater. So they met in the theater in 1834 in Huntsville. He goes on to say, I've been discarded, called a Campbellite, opposed, calumniated, misrepresented, abused, denied entrance into houses consecrated to the worship of the only living and true God as an authorized teacher of the living oracle. So Wharton had a mountain to climb there. He left Tuscumbia and went to Nashville and was associated with Talbert Fanning in the beginning of some of the publications there in the 1840s and 50s. He was also an elder of the church in Nashville when Jesse B. Ferguson was there. He stood against Ferguson when Ferguson went off into spiritualism. This is another interesting slide. Millennial Harbinger, 1845. On the 8th instant, Brethren J.T. Johnson, W. Morton, myself, expect to leave home for Huntsville region of North Alabama preaching tour. J.T. Johnson, of course, was John T. John Telemachus Johnson. His brother was Vice President of the United States. Became famous in the Indian Wars because he killed Chief Pontiac. And J.T. Johnson served 2 terms in Congress before he became a preacher. This is from Larimore and his boys, and Strigley has this to say about the church in Madison. He says, the same year, 1880, he, T.B. Larimore, was requested to preach in the little town of Madison. There was a woman in Madison that invited him to come and preach. And so they came with brothers Heron and Elam. This is E.A. Elam, who was one of the teachers there at Mars Hill. They accompanied him. The meeting resulted in several additions to the church, and steps were immediately taken to build a house. In a few months, we had a good house and a good church there. So that's in 1880. There's still not a building in Huntsville. But the next slide deals with that also and shows how Larimore helped to build the first building in Huntsville. About this time, 1880, he visited Huntsville, Alabama, delivered a series of sermons. This was the beginning of a work which resulted in the establishment of a church in that city. In later years, when it was decided to build a house of worship in Huntsville, he took the field and traveled several weeks to raise funds to help complete the house. So Larimore went out and hit the road to raise funds to build the building in Huntsville, Alabama. This would have been in the late 1880s. There was not a church in Florence until 1889. As strong as the church had been from 1823, all those years in Lauderdale County, was not a church in Florence until 1889, which was, well, I take that back. There are some references to a church out near the old mill on Cypress Creek there where you live, and don't know really anything about it. But then the Poplar Street Church there in 1889, which the College View Church is. Well, the conclusion of this, as we go back and look at all of this, there were settlers from Tennessee that brought the gospel into Alabama. We use the date 1807. There's no documentation to spread the gospel throughout Alabama from this work. Benjamin Lynn and his family, 1810, began to spread the gospel in Alabama. The gospel spread to Lauderdale County, then back to Limestone and Madison counties, and the gospel spread in Colbert and Franklin counties through the influence of John Taylor, Walker Scott, and Talbert Fanning. So that's all the slides. I've got some bibliographies if you're interested in it.